Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, and we are in the thick of international season now. After all of those Euros preview episodes last week, we thought we'd switch continents, and we're taking a look today at the Copa America, working our way through the groups and each of the teams to find out who's going to come out on top in this tournament. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me, as ever, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, I've had to switch gears again in my brain for this one. I'm in Euros mode, I'm in transfer window mode, and now I'm having to get into Copa America mode as well. The kids have definitely had to take a back seat at the moment because there's way too much football going on in my brain. Hopefully Taylor's looking after them because I just haven't got time anymore, mate. But this is going to be very exciting. I'm going to be paying closer attention to this Copa America than any other of my lifetime, because for the most of the tournament, actually, I will be in America. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited to see it in real time as well. Every Copa America, I just watch it the next day. I catch up on the main stuff. But once I'm over that side of the pond, I can actually grab Euros earlier in the day and then catch Copa America as it's happening. And I'm really excited, mate, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a credible tournament. I'm really, really looking forward to it. Well, let's get stuck into Group A, Dean, and you're going to take us away with the current world champions, Argentina.
Yeah, exactly, mate. I mean, what do they say? Getting to the top is hard, but staying there is even harder, right? So you've got Argentina here, World Cup winners, the reigning Copa America champions. They've won this competition 15 times. Can they go and do it again? If they can, it's pretty special, because 16 will be a standout record, and they will be leading the way in this part of the world for successful trophy lift. So a very special moment potentially here for Argentina, but obviously added pressure because of the expectation that comes on the back of recent successes. I mean, obviously, they've got the Messi factor. If you go through people's predictions of player of the tournament, Messi still right there. Like, everyone's scared to suggest anything other than Leo Messi being the player of this tournament. Not convinced personally that that will be the case, but I can understand that if you've just got to be asked to predict someone to be the player of the tournament, this is where you'd go, because the chances are, if Argentina do go and lift a trophy again, he's been pivotal in that moment. Also, with Messi, it could be his last tournament on the international stage. You never know. Certainly the last one here for Di Maria, Angel Di Maria, likely to have his minutes managed here quite carefully to make sure he can continue to be important to this team, not only just for his leadership, but obviously still having those game-breaking abilities. Messi in the friendlies recently and in training has been managed very carefully himself to make sure he's ready for the tournament. Looks like that's going to be the case as we record this. Messi looking like he will be fine. It's just such a good side, like front to back, and there's star quality throughout. I mean, I know that goes without saying, but when you're just flicking through it and you're like, Emi Martinez, Lisandro Martinez, oh, McAllister, oh, Enzo, oh, Alvarez, oh, Lautaro. The options that they had to pick from initially were already sensational in terms of the depth pool, but then one of the toughest jobs for the manager, Lionel Scaloni, is to actually make the right picks. Like, it's that tough. Scaloni was supposed to be a stopgap manager at one point, but he's pretty much made the role his own and he's set high expectations that he's basically got to live up to. Personally, like, while all the talk will be of Messi, Julian Alvarez is the guy that I'm looking towards for having a top tournament and being the standout player here. Okay, maybe he's got to live in Messi's shadow to some extent, but whether he's supporting him, whether he's alongside him, Alvarez is kind of fine with that. We've seen that in club football. We've seen it in international football. He's best supporting actor for a reason. One day he's going to be an absolute superstar in his own right and he'll take the big accolades and he'll enjoy those moments. But for now, he seems okay living in the shadows a little bit, but then bursting out and also making massive contributions. I mean, when you think about what you're going to expect tactically from this team, I honestly think it's quite simple, really, because while stylistically you will have individual brilliance, it's really all about finding the right balance. And often they come back to a 4-4-2 that is successful for them. Like, that might not be the formation as it's set out throughout, but they will always go back into those moments when they need to. You'll see that the fullbacks have quite a big role in terms of getting forward. And as a result of that, their centre-back pairing is going to be extremely important. Otamendi and Romero's obviously been a fantastic combination. You've got Lisandro Martinez as well, who's going to be the future guy that comes in here. Who knows how this will shape up throughout the tournament. But one thing we do know with Argentina is that they're just no nonsense, and that the two that are left behind are going to sort things out, and that there's a clear understanding of how this works. Also, with the fullbacks, when they do push on, the job of the wide forwards then is to cut in size and cause trouble. And, you know, I haven't even mentioned Garnacho yet, but he could have a really big tournament here. One, if he finds full confidence, but two, if he can start to find some of the form that we have seen at Man United at times. And of course, Di Maria is going to be vital. So, yeah, I do like the balance of this team, mate. I think that there is a good chance that they do go and win it again. You've got the balance of the experience and the age with Messi and Di Maria and Otamendi, but that's balanced out by the verve and energy of the likes of Garnacho and Enzo and Alvarez in this team. Of course, the expectation is that they're there in Miami on the final night, lifting the trophy aloft. They might well be, mate. They might well be.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about balance, right? And whatever that midfield looks like, whether it's three in the middle or it's a 4-4-2, as you kind of say, if Messi is playing as one of the kind of forwards, then he kind of gets licensed to roam, doesn't he? So it kind of means that there is often a striker alongside him, but that striker might not necessarily be playing an out-and-out role. They might be playing from the wide positions. Messi might be drifting inside. It's really difficult to kind of pin it down. There is a little bit of the Ancelotti, if you will, about this side. Now, look, Scaloni is not Ancelotti. He doesn't have the tactical nous, but there is a sense of being like, look, we have incredible footballers, get them into positions where they can cause damage and things will tend to go our way. And there is a pretty rock solid, you mentioned, defensive unit behind this. I just kind of look at the midfield and you're like, well, these are the options. You've got Paredes in there, Rodrigo de Paul, who obviously had such a big role at the World Cup as a kind of enforcer. Ezequiel Palacios, who had a terrible Europa League final, but generally has had a good season for Leverkusen. Gio Lo Celso, who hasn't featured all that much for Tottenham, but is a pretty key member of this Argentina side. Guido Rodriguez, who looks like he might be signing for Barcelona from Real Betis. Alexis, Enzo. it's very hard to be like, well, which combination are they going to use? Does it matter? And that's where it becomes quite hard to look past this squad. That midfield depth is there. And look, as holders and then World Cup winners, they have that opportunity to emulate a side like Spain did, right? In the middle of the early 2000s when they won Euros, World Cup, Euros. This would be on a par in terms of the level available, but also in terms of what they're achieving. But I agree. I think that there's just so much about this. Ahead of the World Cup, I remember Nico Gonzalez for Fiorentina getting injured and being really worried about that. What would that do to this Argentina side because of the way that he tends to hug that left touchline and actually stretch teams that allow other players to come in and be really important? That's going to be interesting as well to see how he's deployed in this tournament, whether he's deployed still ahead of Garnacho as someone that's going to do that because he's not quite as come off the wing and make things happen for Argentina. Where Lautaro fits into this, where Julian Alvarez fits into this, as you say, the amount of talent here is remarkable. And look, you talked about the fullbacks. You're like, well, which two are going to play? Don't know. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. It's like Taliafico, Montiel, Acuna and Molina. All four of them will do a job. It's not necessarily a problem. And it's nice to see Valentin Barco of Brighton and formerly of Boca there as well. Because when you kind of look at the future of this and what it looks like, you're starting to see a few more of the next generation come through. But right now, it remains quite difficult to look past Scaloni's Argentina, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a pretty good group, haven't they? They're in here with Peru, Chile and Canada. I don't know that I can guarantee Argentina win the whole tournament, but I think I can guarantee they win this group.
Yeah, and Texas on quite nice as the other three because I'm not convinced by any of these so far. Now, we'll start with Canada because they feel like they're on the right kind of trajectory. Equally, we're basing that off two friendlies where we've seen this side under Jesse Marsh, and it doesn't feel like loads to go on. So this is Canada's first ever participation in the Copa America, which is pretty cool. The first time they're at the tournament and they did well in terms of getting here with the Nations League, et cetera, et cetera. So the way that Canada got here was a little bit unconventional, but you kind of get to this point and it felt like they needed something to kind of move on from the Herdman era, which was, I think, overall a success. But obviously it came kind of crashing down a little bit at the World Cup in terms of the idea that it did feel a little bit like it was running on vibes. And I don't really mean that with any disrespect. We've said Aaron on here ahead of that World Cup talking about the Canada team and talking about the fact that things were on a positive trajectory in terms of the kind of nation's footballing standing as a whole. Post-World Cup, it did feel like things just sort of collapsed a little bit in on themselves. And this now feels like a brand new era. Now, this is a good side, right? Maxime Crépeau in goal. Alistair Johnston obviously plays for Celtic. There's Cornelius, who plays for Malmo, has had a really good season there and been really impressive. And I'm glad that he's got that opportunity to come in. I think it's overdue in terms of where he lives with this side. Bombito is having a good time at Colorado. Fonzi Davies needs no introduction. But then there's Tejan Buchanan at Inter. Ismail Kone, who I think could be a breakout star at this tournament for Watford, has had a couple of really good seasons. And I feel like he's just one of those players that's ready to explode. Eustachio, who's obviously a regular for Porto, Champions League player. And then Liam Miller, who's having a really good time, not just at Preston, but with this Canada team. He feels like he's growing into it. And especially, I think, after the first 10 minutes where he's a bit shaky against France, I think he became their most dangerous outlet. And then there's Carl Larin, who's obviously his nation's top scorer, playing for Mallorca, and Jonathan David, who we talk about on this podcast quite a lot. Schaffelberg of Nashville has been making some really positive impacts, I think, off the bench. And I think Richie Larea is still able to make an impact too. They are, for my money, a little bit light in centre midfield. But having seen what they've done in the last two games, and I think for three out of the four halves that they've played against the Netherlands and France, looked really, really good. They've looked very, very impressive. I suppose the question comes, when Canada have more of the ball, when they dominate, are they able to show such resilience, show such resolve? Would the transitions then open up a little bit more? And that's a little bit uncomfortable. But for now, I think they have a real shot of coming second in this group. And it's going to be interesting to see how that develops, because when you look at the other two, I'll start with Peru. I'm not really convinced that Peru are any cop, and neither back at the start of the year were their federation, because they fired manager Juan Reynoso, replaced him with Uruguayan Jorge Fossati. They're currently bottom of the pile in CONMEBOL World Cup qualifications. They've won zero of their six games. They picked up just 2 points. And all of that kind of points to a side floundering for both identity and results. Now, Fossati has managed three friendlies since coming in, two wins over the Dominican Republic and Nicaragua in March, which boosted confidence a little bit, and then a really boring 0-0 draw with Paraguay this week that almost certainly dulled it again. And I implore you, if you're listening to this and you haven't already, don't watch that game, because that is 90 minutes of my life. I'm not getting back. Peru are, in their defense, no pun intended, quite hard to break down. They only lost 1-0 to Brazil back in September, and that was a 90th minute Marquinhos header. Two brilliant Messi goals were their undoing in a 2-0 loss to Argentina in October. They tend to sit quite deep in their 3-5-2, and they have two defensive midfielders in front of a pretty unadventurous back three. It means there's not much attacking flair going on. It's a pretty solid shield. There's three midfielders in there who sort of rotate. Celta Vigo's Renato Tapia, who's an old favourite of this podcast. Orlando City's Wilder Cartagena and Gil Vicente's Jesus Castillo. Three good options, I think, for those midfield slots. The back three has plenty of experience to draw upon. Pedro Galese is an experienced option between the sticks. Has had a good, pretty much solid time of it in MLS. But it's really hard to see where the goals are coming from, Dean. Paulo Guerreiro and Gianluca Lapadula still lead the attack. Guerreiro is 40. And Lapadula is 34 at this point. And Piero Quispe, who is the bright young thing in this side, playing at 10, can only do so much on his own. Look, he's brilliant on the ball. He's able to make things happen by himself. He's 22 years old. He does have the potential to be a real star, I think. And if Peru do something in this tournament, I imagine that Quispe is going to be right at the heart of it. So you could be pretty sure that if they qualify, Quispe is going to be being hailed as a bright young thing, as one to watch, because he does really feel like the single attacking dynamo in a pretty unattacking side.
Not so sure. Canada, though, maybe having a new manager in Jesse Marsh helps them. And maybe the fact that he hasn't been there that long helps too, because they have to prove a point to him. And he's trying to prove a point to everybody else that, well, he should be the manager of USA, not the manager of Canada.
We need to talk about Chile, because they remain the other team in this group. And on paper, right, you go, Chile are, well, they should be the team that naturally you'd assume we're going to come second here.
Yeah, I
was watching a video the other day from when we were on Live School. It was from January 2022. And I said in this video that Chile had failed to refresh from their golden generation. I was deeply concerned that they weren't going to qualify for the World Cup. Crystal Ball says good analysis. The problem is that they're still failing to do that. They're two-time Copa America winners. They won in 2015 and 2016. I have no faith that this is the year that they return to the top table, because just from this squad selected, only three players fall into an age range of 23 or under. 14 players, including eight members who I make the regular starting lineup, are 30 or over. They've won just one of their six World Cup qualifiers so far. That was against Peru, who are even worse. They've scored in just two of those games. They average 0.5 goals a game. They've conceded seven in six. You do the maths. Internationals football's weird, right? And maybe the old war horses, Alexis Sanchez, Mauricio Isla, Arturo Vidal, Eduardo Vargas, Claudio Bravo, can pull something out of the bag here, especially in a group that doesn't look that strong outside of Argentina. But recent games don't really suggest that's the case. They had a couple of decent friendlies in March. They beat Albania 3-0. They lost narrowly to France. But on the whole, competitive outings have all been pretty disappointing. They have a fair bit of the ball. They do very little with it. Speculative shots, Hollywood switch passes make up the bulk of what they've been capable of putting together. They press quite well, is about all I can say for Chile right now. They hunt the ball relatively aggressively. The back line has more obvious weaknesses than pretty much any of their South American counterparts. Defenders keep getting stepping out and keep getting caught out. I just can't in good faith sit here and say I think Chile are going
to
be good.
Yeah, pretty concerned for Chile, to be honest, in terms of where they once were. It's a team that you want to be excited by and feel that they have loads of potential. Not so sure. 10 years ago, they knocked Spain out of the World Cup. 10 years is a long time, and it feels like a long time too. And that's why, as I said too about Canada, they're not necessarily a good team, but they have got this Jesse Marsh factor, which could help them. Don't forget, though, Canada went to the last World Cup and didn't even get a single point. So, again, maybe having a new manager helps them edge through. It's a weird old group, because I really don't know how it shapes up in terms of second spot. But as I say, like, I could pretty much guarantee Argentina win it. And I'm going to say there could be a surprise and that Canada can do it just because of the state the other two are in right now.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's pretty much a dogfight between Chile and Canada for that second spot. I just don't feel like Peru have the attacking flair or ability to cause really anyone many problems. And I think it probably comes down to the fact of whether you trust in the experience of players like Alexis and Arturo Vidal on one hand, or this kind of, can Canada get this massive boost and the kind of play style off Jesse Marsh in this period before the competition starts in his 10 days that he has with the squad? So that's your toss up. I'd probably edge towards Canada as well.
Yeah, very good, mate. Very good. Yeah. Look, Argentina in the group. It's interesting.
Of course. And we'll see when the opener comes if this Argentina side are going to live up to expectations. Although bear in mind, they did lose their first game at the World Cup as well and then went on to win it. Right, shall we move on to Group B?
Yeah, I'm going to start by talking about Mexico and I'm going to try to play them up a little bit. I don't know that we should expect much of this team, but I am going to try to be optimistic because I think that that's the best place to be now if you are a fan of this team. Obviously, in terms of qualification, they're granted a bye because they're one of the seeded teams. But they've never won Copa America and it probably ain't going to happen now. So I'll get that bit of pessimism out of the way. I don't think Mexico are going to go and win the tournament for the first time. And disappointingly for me, two of my favourite Mexican players aren't even going. Raul Jimenez of Fulham and Chucky Lozano of San Diego. My two teams, mate. This could have been a dream, having Lozano teeing up Raul Jimenez. Unfortunately, neither are going and probably neither deserve to go. I mean, look, the FA wanted a bit of a different look about this Mexico team for this tournament, and they've got it by leaving some of their stars at home. Ochoa, the goalkeeper, is what, 38, 39 by now? Yeah, they're trying to move on from those days, and a new generation's starting to come through. Look, they've got a talented crop. It's just a case of getting them to actually perform at this level, and I think a good example of that is Edson Alvarez. Obviously an outstanding midfielder, and he probably is their star at the moment, to be honest, but getting him to play the way he plays for West Ham is a little bit more difficult in this setup. But his job basically is going to be to dictate the tempo of his side and get them to play in possession. They want to keep the ball as much as possible. That's what I'm expecting of this team. And then up top, you've got the new star factor of Santi Jimenez. Who's obviously been on fire at Feyenoord. We've talked about him a lot on Ranks across this season, here and on Patreon. And we're both fans of his. Could even end up earning a move to the Premier League this summer. And he's a really interesting player. And if he can break through it this summer and on this stage in terms of an international sense, it could be great. Like he's got quite a lot to his game because you look at him and you know how he's going to be, like physically, he's going to dominate people. But he's good on the ground as well. Like he's got both of those things going for him. He knows how to stick the ball in the back of the net. But he also knows how to gel a forward line and he can dribble a bit. He could put in key passes. He has the potential to like round off that attack, which could be quite a lively attack, let's say, too, because of the players that are going to be around him. So I like the fact that Santi Jimenez has big breakthrough potential here. And I mean that by a more global audience rather than us that are watching him a lot anyway. Obviously, too, Mexico are going to have huge support at the tournament. Look, they've just got to make sure that they can get this team going. I mean, a lot of the time they've used a 4-2-3-1, which supposedly is the best way they can get this group of players playing at the top talent. As I said, they are likely to attempt at least a possession-based game. That's been the aim, at least, not always achieved. And they're a strong side. Like physically, you're always going to know you're in a game against Mexico, particularly defensively, one of their better traits probably, even though they will still concede goals. And I think we can still expect them to qualify for the knockout stages, probably as champions of this group. I don't think it's going to be straightforward. And they're going to have to perform well. You know, Ecuador, Venezuela and Jamaica all bring very different problems to the table here for Mexico to overcome. It is going to be a competitive group, I think, much more so than Group A that we've just spoken about. But I do think Mexico should expect to at least make it through this group, but probably as group winners. Probably.
Interesting. I don't, for what it's worth.
And I did say at the start, Jack, I'm trying to be optimistic here. I want Mexico to have a good tournament.
What I think is really interesting is that this side is made up a lot of Liga MX-based players. There's not too many sort of imports from elsewhere. And I think part of that, you know, we talked about those players that have been left out. I think part of that is to do with this. I think that they're trying to reorientate around players based in Mexico, which is an interesting tactic. And look, Jaime Lozano has said over the course of this, they've kind of spent time learning and trying to develop their identity as a team. A draw against Brazil the other night, what was really interesting was how front-footed they were in terms of pressing, in terms of trying to win the ball high up. And, you know, they'd obviously learned from Uruguay and that 4-0 defeat a couple of days beforehand, because it did feel like they had looked at that and be like, oh, I wonder if we could pull something like that off. And to be fair to them, in many ways, it worked. Now, Brazil obviously scored twice. They were 2-0 down. They found themselves back at 2-2 after a really kind of spirited display. The first goal that they score is obviously they win the ball back high and score directly from it. So I think that's interesting to see how they develop as a side here over the course of this tournament. But equally, I'm still a bit concerned about how it's going to all come together. And I don't really have any of those concerns for Ecuador, because they feel like a really strong side at the moment. Now, there was a kind of a bit of hope going into the 2022 World Cup with the way that they qualified, that they were going to be able to do something. And they obviously win the first game, the opening game against Qatar, and then end up not getting through the group stages. But they appointed former Qatar manager quite soon after that tournament in Félix Sánchez-Baz. And he's been very, very good for this team. They've made a really good start to the 2026 qualifying cycle. They've gone unbeaten in 5 of their 6 games. They lost 1-0 narrowly to Argentina. They've kept clean sheets in the last 3. Feels like a bit of a kind of rock solid back line going on here. And there's some players in here that I really like. Preciado, who's had a brilliant season, and a lot of people who watched Europa League will have seen him playing for Sparta Prague, scoring some really important goals from right back. Pasho at Frankfurt, I think, is one to keep an eye on. And Hincapié, obviously, from Leverkusen. That's a very, very strong back line all of a sudden. They have Moises Caicedo, obviously, in the middle, and Kendry Páez, who a lot of Chelsea fans have heard a lot about, but I think really has the capability to grab this tournament, you know, by the scruff of the neck and make it his own, because he is that talented. They have Minda, who's at Cercle Bruges, who's a really, really good player. And then Jeremy Sarmiento, who obviously is at Brighton. He plays in a sort of differing role for this, but they have really good attacking options. And then Ener Valencia, the old warhorse, still knocking around up there as well. There's Ordonez as well at centre-back, who is at Club Bruges. He was a Golden Boy nominee. I'm not sure if he's going to start in this tournament, but feels like one for the future. This Ecuador side feel like they've come through the age groups really, really well. And they've had some very impressive performances at international level, at sort of under 20s, under 17s. There's a lot to like about them in those age groups. And suddenly it feels like a lot of those players are into this starting lineup. They're playing really well and they feel like they have that mesh from coming through together. I'm really, really excited about this Ecuador team. And I think they will win this group.
Oh, I don't know if that's a bold call or not. Is it? Yeah, it is.
It is and it isn't in so many ways. It's a funny one, right? Because Ecuador have probably the most talented crop in this group on paper. You look through it and you look at all the names that they have and you're starting to think about it and going, yeah, that doesn't really make... It should, on paper, be a team that goes on to win the group, that should be able to cause some upsets, that should be able to come into the knockouts and think, yeah, why not? We have the ability, we have the capability. And I hope that they grow into this tournament. I really do, because they have that kind of tag of tournament flops, I think is maybe unfairly associated with them, but was kind of re-instigated after what happened in 2022. But they come into this, I think, in an even better place than that tournament. And I think it's an exciting time to be an Ecuador fan.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, you're going to talk about it now, but Jamaica are the team that I had in my head as the potential surprise package that, like, could do bits.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about one of them. Venezuela, I think, will probably be putting themselves in that category too. They've also had a really good start to qualifying. They're actually a place ahead of Ecuador in the qualification table right now, which is a pretty cool place for them to be. So this feels, again, quite open, right? And look, let's go Jamaica first because you've just mentioned them. But look, they've qualified for the Copa twice before. They're yet to score a single goal at Copa America, and they've lost all six of their... They've lost all six of their matches against CONMEBOL opposition rather than CONCACAF, which is not a great place to be. But they took that into, and this new generation under Jaime Halgrimsson feels like they've kind of moved in a different direction. There's been a lot of dual nationals that have kind of come into this squad now. And I think that generally it does feel like they're putting together something a little bit more cohesive than what we've seen from them in the past. They had a brilliant run in the Nations League group stages, which allowed them to come to the automatic Copa America spot. They won in the Nations League and ended up coming third in that tournament, beating Panama in the third place playoff to win this spot, which was pretty cool. It's a funny one in terms of I'm not quite sure how they're going to play, because they have often played with a 4-4-2 against weaker sides and played a 3-4-3 against stronger sides. I think it might be the latter. Sacrifice is obviously one of the number nines to get a bit more defensive stability. And we saw that against the USA when they played them. They took that early lead, hung on to the 93rd minute, got done in injury time, and then lost the game in extra time, which was a pretty heartbreaking experience, I imagine, for everyone involved. But there does just feel like there's this sense they are moving towards something better. And yet, so many of the headlines going into this line, this decision, and the whole furore surrounding Leon Bailey. He's been an absolute menace in the Premier League this season, rediscovering that form that made him such a hotly tipped prospect when he did burst onto the scene. Various fallings out with management have seen his minutes for Jamaica limited in a big way. The last time he was included in a Jamaica squad was back in November for the Nations League quarterfinals, and he's been left out of the Copa America squad, which is a massive blow for, I think, the tournament as a whole, but mostly for the Reggae Boys, because there's no doubt that when all things are considered, he's the country's best player. So without him, they're going to need both Bobby Decordova-Reed, who is a player we know and love well, and Damara Gray to step up to the plate once again. If they're used as wingers in that 3-4-3 rather than wide midfielders, the brief slightly changes. Attacking output from both is absolutely necessary if Jamaica are going to shake their dreadful record at the Copa. But I do think that in terms of a squad, there's some really interesting players. Latibodia, who's had a really good season for Coventry, one to keep an eye on. Lembekisa as well, who probably play right wing back. And then Lee, who scored the goal against America, is a very, very interesting player. So much revolves around Shamar Nicholson, though, because he will be the focal point, the centerpiece of this attack. And people will be sitting here listening going, what about Mikel Antonio? But I think Jamaica have come to a realization that they don't need necessarily from the start someone who's going to run in behind in a 3-4-3. They need someone who's going to hold the ball up and bring others into play. And that's actually what Nicholson is so, so good at. Mm. He's a bit of a stalwart for his country. And I think that Antonio will play a part, but mostly off the bench, or if they see an opportunity to go to that 4-4-2, someone who can play alongside him and make things happen. So it can be really intriguing. Cefas also can be an option up top in a 4-4-2. He plays in Turkey for Ankara Gucu, and New York Red Bulls, Corey Burke, also utilised in those areas too. Caroy Anderson and Daniel Johnson might be needed in midfield if they go into that 4-4-2 for some defensive solidity. But look, Casey Palmer's in there. Decordova-Reed's in there. Damari Gray's in there. They're going to need all three of those to step up and create if they're going to cause a stir. But you're right, there is talent in this squad.
Yeah, and I think they've also got a sense of unpredictability about them, which might help them. I think that's something that I'm excited to see in that team. And they could, yeah, they're one of those teams that could emerge as everybody's favourite second team if it can all come together. But of course, it could also equally blow up. So I'm going to continue to stick by Mexico, and you can go for Ecuador.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, Venezuela become the wild card because, considering they're the only team that's never qualified for a World Cup from CONMEBOL, there's a real sense of optimism around the start of this campaign. And it does feel like they're moving in a really good direction. It is a squad rather than, you know, littered with star players that is together and very much kind of more than the sum of its parts. But Fernando Batista has done a brilliant job since he took over about a year and 2 months ago. He took over in March 2023 after they finished bottom of the qualifying group once again. And they've gone unbeaten in five of their opening six qualifiers this time round. It does feel like that history might be about to be made because there is more to this side than the sum of its parts. There's some really interesting players in here. 14 of their 19 Copa America campaigns have ended in the group stages. So there is that sense of the odds remaining stacked against them. But they feel like they could be in a really good position and a really good group to kind of upset the apple cart at some point because no one feels infallible in this group. There is no obvious kind of, oh, they are a clear-cut Argentina-esque team that are going to go on and win the group. And I think that this kind of mix of emerging talent and experienced players could provide a really nice spark for this Venezuela side. A couple of players of note who knock around in Europe. There's Osorio, defender who plays for Parma, just qualified and have been a big part of how Parma got back to Serie A. Aramburu, who will play right wing back, is on Real Sociedad's books, played a lot of time for their B team, real talent there, and someone that I think they see as one for the first team quite close. Yangel Herrera, who we know well from his time at Granada and Girona. And then there's this kind of, there's three players that can play next to him, Martinez, Rincon, and Caceres Jr. And then Salomon Rondon up top alongside Darwin Machis. There's talent here. And I think that, you know, if Rondon doesn't fire, which he might not, we've seen him not fire before, there's John de Cadiz, who is placed for Famalicão. He's got 15 and 30 in the Primeira this season. Really good option, really good goal scorer. Someone who can come in and make things happen. This Venezuela side, I think, shouldn't be written off.
Fair enough, mate. Played them up more than I was expecting, to be honest. So I thought we were going to just rule them out of getting out of the group, but you haven't.
No, I haven't at all. And I wouldn't as well. I think that would be incredibly bold. All right, that's groups A and B rounded up. After the break, we're going to be looking at group C and D, kicking off with the Stars and Stripes, the USMNT. So go anywhere. Welcome back to the Copa America preview here on Ranks FC. We're going to get stuck into group C. Dean, going to kick us off with your new home, the USMNT.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. But the thing I'm looking forward to when I get to America halfway through the tournament is that I just think there's going to be such unity because the whole country is behind Greg Berhalter and think he's just going to do such a good job this summer. I just don't see how it could go wrong here. Everyone's full of belief in this guy and it's all going to be fine. Yeah, maybe not. Look, this is a difficult situation because you look at the team and you feel you should be able to expect big things. But then you look at the manager and the performances and you expect pretty much nothing. That is extremely frustrating. They've just been beaten 5-1 by Colombia. Not ideal. We're recording this before they play against Brazil. Maybe they beat Brazil. Maybe they don't. Yeah, probably they don't. But look, the thing on their side is that obviously the tournament's at home. That's great. But they also have a great blend of players throughout their squad. So you've got the prime players, you've got the breakout players, you've got some experienced players. This squad is actually pretty nice.
Yeah, it's in a good place.
In terms of doing well in the tournament, it's still going to be tough because even if they get through the first stages, I think they faced Brazil or Colombia in the quarterfinals. So, you know, this isn't a tournament that I'm particularly expecting the US to go and win. But obviously, this is the beginning of a period in which they play here in Copa America and then they're on home soil again in a couple of years' time for the World Cup. So a nation expects not to win, but to at least come out of it with some respect and some hope. Now, what's Berhalter aiming for? Well, I think he's got good objectives. I think he's got good intentions. I think he wants to play a possession-based game. I think that when I talk to people that cover the team closer than I do, or who watch this team like properly, like they're their team. They talk about the fact that when things go well, they do have good movements off the ball. They can rotate well. The midfield three can combine brilliantly. And they can actually cause problems, because at times, say it's Rainer Adams McKennie, they'll stay tight and deep at times, and they'll force the opposition to come out and come and get them. And they have the great potential in this team to break out and be able to burst away. Like, they do have that ability to then, well, go 5v4 basically and take on defences. The problem is they don't do that enough. And I don't think that there's much confidence that they'll do this effectively. Now, one thing too with the US is that the fullbacks are very important and often integral to the way that they do attack. Now, Anthony Robinson, again, a Fulham player that we've seen a lot of, is going to be very good at that. But Sergino Dest is not there. And I feel that he's going to be a really big miss. I know that goes without saying, really, but I do feel like Dest is going to be a big miss for what it will be lacking down that side. Look, Scally, say he plays, he's good, but he's not Dest. So we look forward again and we're like, okay, so what else are we going to get here? You've got pace. You've got wide players that can attack. You've got some innovative players too around that front line. But who's going to score the goals? I want to say Balogun scores the goals. I want to say that you can trust Balogun. And to some degree, I do trust Balogun more than I've trust any other US strikers in recent years gone by. Got 6 goal contributions in 10 games as we record this. 3 goals, 3 assists. I'm still on the fence a bit as to how clinical he will actually be in a tournament like this, because they have to take their chances when they come. And if he is the guy that gets the nod through the middle, then he's got to be finishing them. Ultimately, it's going to be Christian Pulisic that's seen as the key player in this team. He's going to be the one that makes things tick. He's the captain. He's the best player of the generation, basically. He'll get at people with his dribbles. We know that his goal contributes are strong. But also the thing with Pulisic, which you can trust him for, is that he'll put a shift in and he'll work backwards as well as going forwards. Like, he's a good... I do actually think Pulisic is a good captain and a good face of this team. And so I trust that element of this team. But obviously, 80% of the fan base doesn't trust the coach. And it's a massive, massive problem. Most of them don't even want it. It's one of those situations. Do you even want him to do well? Because if he does reasonably well, you're probably stuck with him for the World Cup. So it's like all or nothing here. If they get the middle ground, which I'm probably expecting that we get here, of getting to last 16, probably getting to quarters, then going out, you're in a midway house whereby, okay, we did all right. We didn't achieve anything really. Are we more confident about the future? Not really. But are they going to sack him? Not really. It could be a bit of a dilemma in that sense. But Berhalter, well, he's got to win over a lot of people. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it does feel like that, doesn't it? It's a shame for Josh Sargent and the injury, I think. And obviously, yeah, it's not confirmed yet, but he's had a really, really good second half of the campaign, in particular with Norwich. And I think that he was very much pushing to be in that conversation. So for him to have picked this up at an inopportune moment is not great. Harji Wright's had a good season, I think, with Coventry City, and seeing him as the kind of backup makes some sense. It's just a kind of question of whether you kind of go for that or you go for Ricardo Pepe, who's done a lot of substitute work for PSV, who's come off the bench and been pretty good across the course of the season. He's kind of made that super sub role his own, and that's not necessarily any fault of his own. Obviously, PSV's captain, Luke de Jong, plays through the middle, so you kind of expect him to be playing in a kind of secondary role there. So if he's doing the same for the US, at least it's something that he's kind of relating to. It's something that he can utilize at this point. I mean, on paper, this squad is very, very good, and it should be getting to the quarterfinals as a kind of minimum. But that's not how international tournaments work, and the cohesion with it needs to come, and it needs to come quickly, or this is going to look a little bit off for the US. I agree with you. I think the Sergino Dest's injury is massive, but that shouldn't, your right back being injured shouldn't be the thing that decides whether you go far in a tournament or not. And no matter how good that player is, you should be able to find solutions within a system that make it stick. And at the moment, it doesn't feel like they're anywhere to be found, and that's why it's all a bit weird right now. But yeah, on paper, the US should be getting out of this group at the very least. And look, some of it will fall into their hands, not Uruguay, because you spoke at the start that if Argentina won the Copa America, they'd go outright clear. Well, Same for Uruguay, who last won the competition in 2011. They've won this competition 15 times, which puts them on par with Argentina. Now, it's been a little bit of time since Oscar Tabárez finally left this Uruguay side after such a long spell in charge. And since then, it's been a little bit all over the place. Diego Alonso failed to live up to the expectations on him, I think, and the way that that side was meant to play. He was dismissed immediately after the World Cup. And it feels like they're in a real transitional moment, Uruguay, because obviously Tabárez left and then Edson Cavani has retired. There's been some other pretty high profile retirements as well. You kind of look at that and think, well, how are they going to get through this? And they go and appoint Marcelo Bielsa, El Loco, in one of the most football loco nations in the world.
Yeah, he's right up there with Berhalter. Sorry, I'll stop.
What a match. Like, what a match between these two, this nation and this man. And the resurgence feels like it's right on course. And suddenly Uruguay don't look like an outside bet. They're not dark horses anymore. Uruguay are the third best team at this competition. And there's a chance that if they gel better than either of the big two, that they could go on and win this. And I think there's a real tangible sense that that might be possible. And kind of with all of this is, you know, Darwin Nunez, who has struggled at times this season for Liverpool. He hasn't been as bad as I think some people have made out. He also hasn't been as good as others have made out. He's had an okay season for Liverpool, which has had high points and low points. But in this Uruguay side, he seems to come to life in the best possible way. He's leading the goal-scoring charts in that Commonwealth World Cup qualifying section, and he seems to have been unleashed by Bielsa in a way that we haven't really seen ever, not even in his kind of free-scoring Benfica days. This is different. The way he plays, the way you see him play for Uruguay feels different to even that period at Benfica where he spent a lot of time off the wing. Here, he is a number nine, very much the kind of centerpiece, the focal point of this team, and he is loving it. And you kind of go to this squad, it's so deep, so deep. Now, Rocher will play in goal, an old head, safe hands. And then the back four, Ronald Araujo probably plays right back. Jimenez of Atletico Madrid plays at centre back alongside Matias Oliveira, who plays left back for Napoli. But I think we'll play left centre back here because it allows him to pick those passing angles, and Bielsa seems to like his ability to carry the ball out of the back line, which leaves a space for Matias Vinha, formerly of Bournemouth and Roma and Sassuolo, to play on that left-hand side. In the midfield, you've got a wealth of options. Ugarte or Bentancur, Valverde and De La Cruz, who I think will play because he adds a little bit more creativity and guile in the midfield, which means you're picking between Ugarte and Bentancur for that final spot, which is a great place to be. And then up top, Pellistri on the right-hand side. Again, feels like he has that different lease of life when he's playing for his country. Darwin through the middle and Maximiliano Araujo on that left-hand side, who's a brilliant player and I really, really like. He's one I think that people will watch in this tournament and be like, yeah, that's a player. Why don't we sign him? So that's going to be intriguing. Look, they can shift Nathan Nandez in at right back and move Araujo to the middle. They could shift Oliveira to left back. They could play Nandez in center midfield. Facundo Torres remains an option. He's been brilliant for Orlando. Sebi Caceres more than capable of stepping in the middle of this defense as a deputy. And Jorge Andy Arrascheta is still knocking about to provide creativity. Him and Suarez can come off the bench if they need goals. Brian Rodriguez can play 10 if they shift to a 4-2-3-1. Someone you look kept an eye on, Kike Oliveira, LAFC, has the potential to be a bit of a breakout star too. The depth in this squad is unbelievable. And I think that they don't have just a chance of winning this group. I think they will win this group. I think they have a chance of winning the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, say underdogs to win it. I mean, I'm not even sure I class them as underdogs to win it, to be honest. I think that if Argentina or Brazil don't win this tournament, then I think that's who I'm looking at. I think that they're that good. Goals aren't a problem. They're pretty special, to be honest. I love watching them. And it's a major problem for the US, isn't it? I mean, we talk about what their chances are. Just the group alone is a massive obstacle because you've got to come up against this team and then keep your heads up depending on how that fixture's gone, because it could be, I don't want to say humiliating, but that's the first word that's come into my head. Because if that team bangs and US don't hit we'll take it, a Colombia-like result is not impossible, put it that way.
No, not at all. They beat Mexico 4-0 a couple of weeks back, and that was without Valverde in the side, who I think pretty much everyone would point to being their best player. That's a wild thing. That was Araujo in the side. There was loads of the players missing for this
Darwin
team.
Darwin Núñez, like, could even be a top scorer at the tournament.
Very easily, I think.
Yeah.
And that's backed up by the fact that I think that the other two sides in this group will probably struggle. Now, that might be a bit harsh on Panama because actually they've had some really impressive performances since Thomas Christiansen came in. You might remember him. He used to be the boss of Leeds United at one point. So there's two former Leeds bosses at this tournament. and they got to the final of the Gold Cup last year. They lost against Mexico in the 88th minute, I think it was, with Santi Jimenez scoring the winner. But a really impressive performance in that tournament, really good run. And it feels like that could be utilized to try and kick on in the Copa America, especially with Bolivia in the group. So it's quite hard to kind of work out exactly where Panama are because they used to have this sort of rock solid defensive line. And then they ended up losing two games at the start of the calendar year, not scoring a goal, conceding four in two games. It's all been a little bit uncomfortable. So they need to kind of work that back. And a big part of that is going to be Norwich's Jose Cordoba, who should anchor the back line. He's a really talented youngster. And I imagine there'll be three at the back with two more experienced counterparts beside him, Fidel Escobar and Roderick Miller, perhaps. On the right-hand side, Marseille wing-back Michael Murillo is a good player, provides quality down at right. And I really like their central midfield pairing. Houston Dynamo's Adalberto Carrasquilla, who plays alongside Hector Herrera in MLS in central midfield, he should provide an all-MLS partnership with captain Anibal Godoy in the midfield shield. Really, really talented. Will know each other's game really well. And I'm really excited about seeing what they can do. Couple to keep an eye on. Jose Luis Rodriguez recently joined Red Star Belgrade from Famalicão. Worth keeping an eye on, as is Eduardo Guerrero. He's a number nine who plays his club football in Ukraine. Probably won't start, but has shown quality in flashes. But their headline act these days is Joel Barcenas, who plays for Mazatlan in Mexico. Plays on the left-hand side of the attack, I think, here. And really, really interesting footballer. Has a lot going for him. Another one of those players that can just make things happen by himself. If they are going to cause teams problems, he's going to be right at the heart of it.
Yeah, you've taught me a bit there, mate. This is not a team that is on my radar at all. So, and typically you just write them off and it's the wrong thing to do.
No, of course. Well, I mean, look, there are two obvious favourites in this group and I think that will play in the US's favour because Bolivia aren't great either. Their continental struggles are pretty well documented. They feature in every Copa America, as a Commonwealth side, but they've only made it out of the group stages four times in their history. And the last time was in 2015. They reached the quarterfinals that year, but they've lost all 11 Copa America fixtures since then by a combined score of 26-6. Yeah. So there is a lot to kind of look at. They have lost their legendary goal scorer, Marcelo Martins Moreno, who decided to retire early this year. He's their all-time top goal scorer, and there really isn't much to talk about. The problem with Bolivia is that as much as I can watch Bolivia games and kind of analyze them as they play, they haven't been very good in those games. And only a few of this squad ply their trade outside of the national teams. So I think there's only two players in Europe. One of them is Boris Cespedes, who plays in Yverdon in Switzerland, who I've never seen play for Yverdon because I've never seen Yverdon play. And then defender Roberto Fernandez, who plays for Baltika Kaliningrad in Russia. So I think it's probably safe to say that most haven't watched their club football and can give an accurate representation of them. So it's quite hard to draw conclusions outside of what we've seen from Bolivia in international games. And what we've seen from Bolivia in international games is not very good. And I think that there does feel like this is a relatively inexperienced squad. It's a relatively homegrown squad. There isn't a standout kind of superstar in there for them to rely on. I struggle to see Bolivia getting out of the group stages considering what we've seen in World Cup qualification.
Yeah, probably a valid point, mate. Not from any of the previews that I've seen. I don't think I've come across anyone that suggests anything other than the two favourites getting out of this group.
Yeah, I agree. Come on then, let's get on to Group D, where there are two other favourites kicking around.
Yeah. So I'll do Brazil. Yeah, it's been a strange time, hasn't it? I mean, 2023 was a nightmare pretty much, and there's no Neymar, obviously, coming into this tournament. And look, there is definitely scope for this team to win the tournament. Let's put that straight away out there. They could win the tournament, but they are not wholly reliable based on the evidence of results and performances that we have seen in the last year. Now, you go through the squad, and look, I love the midfield variety. I love the options that are there. The attack is potentially second to none. Some people are concerned about the firepower, the lack of a proper number nine that's proven at this level. But I just get excited about what we might be able to see come through. Look, available to them, they've got a Pep Guardiola dream trio, mate. Bruno Guimarães, Douglas Luiz and Lucas Paqueta, all players that Pep's been linked with signing in the not too distant past. And we quite like them all at Man City. It won't happen, but he has been linked with all of them. Obviously, Douglas Luiz currently on the verge of joining Juventus as we talk right now. But our boy Andreas Pereira gets in there as well. Another Fulham player. Blimey, the links are continuous today. More Fulham players in this tournament than there is often seen at Craven Cottage. But
there is at the Euros. I think there's more players in the top.
Absolutely is.
Definitely.
But obviously in that midfield, you've also got Edison of Atalanta. There's a lot of Premier League options in there. But
He's the only non-Premier League option that they've gone for. And he has some big, big links to the Premier League as well. So that'll be interesting.
He does, actually. That's true. One Premier League midfielder that won't be going, if you even count him as a Premier League midfielder anymore, is Casemiro. His days are numbered. But ahead of these guys, you know, you're looking at some proper verve and guile and excitement in Rafinha and Martinelli and Vinny Jr. And then, of course, you've got Rodrigo and you've got Endrick to finish off chances. Now, I understand that you think, okay, where's the nine? You know, Richarlison not going and all the rest of it. But Rodrigo has big potential to do well at this tournament. A lot of people tipping him to be the top goal scorer at the tournament. And Endrick obviously is breaking through and showing absolutely no fear, no matter who the opponent is. We're already seeing that. So this is a good team, but, you know, go to the game that they lost to Argentina, for example, like they weren't good that day and they didn't deserve to beat them. And if they play like that, they won't be doing anything. It's a possibility we get these two teams meeting in the final. A Brazil-Argentina final is probably what the people running this tournament would like to see, because you're going to be getting the biggest audience possible. It probably won't work out that way, to be honest with you, but they're certainly going to give it a good crack, Brazil this time. They're 9 times winners of this tournament. And look, one thing that I'm not sure it's a good thing or a bad thing is the coach. So right now you've got the coach, Dorival Jr., who, look, he's not famous. Most people have no idea who he is outside of Brazil. But the good news is, if you've been in Brazil, you like football, you definitely know who he is, because he's managed 25 Brazilian clubs since 2002. So he's properly been round the block and earned his, he's certainly earned the chance to get to this level. Don't think many people would have expected him to do this, but given where Brazil were with the coaching status in recent times, it's probably the best situation they've been in for a while, because they've just been coach hopping, basically. And he's done okay so far. I think there's got to be some optimism around the fact that he does this right. Obviously, this is where he's going to get judged properly. But they do have more identity since he came in. Look, can Vinny Jr. fire? Can he light up this tournament? This is not the same player when we see him for Brazil as the one that we see for Real Madrid. And it's something that will be talked about a lot in the days leading up to it, and probably in the first match as well. But his stats aren't great. 29 appearances for Brazil and 3 goals. Copa America, he's played 4 times for Brazil, 0 goals, 0 assists. The World Cup, he's played for Brazil 4 times, 1 goal, 2 assists. World Cup qualifiers, 10 appearances, 1 goal, 1 assist. And in friendlies, 11 games, 1 goal, 2 assists. Doesn't add up. That's not the guy that we see every week.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I've been listening to quite a lot of Brazil podcasts to try and kind of get a grip on this and try and work out where the Brazilian fans feel like they are. And I think that the results under Dorival Jr., look, it's an interesting one. It was definitely not the coach that they wanted. And there was the Fernando Diniz era where things necessarily didn't go to plan. I think when you look at his Fluminense team and you kind of see the way he wants to play with that kind of very fluid relational system between players. It's interesting to kind of work out how that would try to fit in to a system or a national team system in such a short period of time. And it didn't really work. Now, that's not to say that he's not doing a wonderful job of Fluminense, because I think he is, but it didn't really work for this team. Since Dorival's come in, he's kind of calmed things down a little bit by the sounds of it. And obviously they go and they win 1-0 against England at Wembley. They draw 3-3 against Spain in a weird game where Spain got two penalties. And then they win 3-2 against Mexico from 2-0 up. Okay, some defensive shortcomings, but shown that they still have that kind of attacking spark. And they've come from a weird place, because Chiche was a wonderful coach for this Brazil side, but he wasn't that fun. And his defensive record and the fact that they were so hard to beat and so hard to break down was something that went massively in his favor. But it wasn't the Brazil sides of flair, the Samba boys that we knew from years back, right? Now, moving away from that involved taking a risk, and the risk didn't really pay off. But Dorival seems to have come in and just freed players up a little bit. And like you say, there's certain players in here who, you know, it's all well and good Vini Jr. being the leading candidate for the Ballon d'Or on one side of the ocean. But if he can't perform for his national team, then I think there is a sense of being like, well, if you can't do it, then get out of the way and let someone else have a go, because there is so many incredible talents here. And we're looking at players like Gabriel Martinelli, who, all right, hasn't had the best season for Arsenal, but is still, you know, someone who can light things up in a Brazil shirt. We're looking at the likes of Savio, who's had an incredible season for Girona, still only 20 years old. We're going to see if he can get an opportunity. Rafinha has tended to deliver on the international stage. Now, his record's not incredible, but he's kind of proved his worth and time again. Endrick has got 3 goals in 5 games and everyone's just incredibly excited, but I don't know if he's going to start. And you've got a couple of wild cards. Someone like Evan Nielsen, who's got in this squad from Porto, who's had another very, very good campaign, who's attracting a lot of interest, still only 24 years old, who does feel like an out-and-out number nine. Now, I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to play Rodrigo through the middle, Rafinha on the right, and Vinicius on the left. But I do think that there is a sense that if Vinicius doesn't perform in the first couple of games, there will be calls for Savio to start. There will be calls for Rodrigo to be moved out of the left and Endrick to go through the middle, or Evan Nielsen. And so it's quite a big tournament for Vini Jr., I think, in terms of his reputation and how he's perceived within this Brazil side. Because I think you ask most Real Madrid fans if, you know, Vinicius or Rodrigo is more crucial to the team, you know, 99% of them are going to say Vinicius. But I think if you ask that question to Seleção fans, then actually that split would be a lot more even than you'd expect, because Rodrigo has tended to play well in a Brazil shirt. Look, the defense is another one. Who's going to partner Éder Militão? Is it going to be Marquinhos? Probably. But Gabriel Magalhães has obviously had another good season at Arsenal and is someone that probably should be throwing their hat in the ring there. Bremer doesn't seem to be in, he's obviously in the squad, but doesn't seem to be massively in the conversation. He dropped out. He wasn't included in friendlies in March and then got a late call up and then sat on the bench. Lucas Beraldo, who's now at PSG, played both those games. He's obviously a lot younger than Bremer, but did okay. Had some ins and outs, but generally did okay, which means that it's all a bit confusing in terms of who's going to start. But I think that if Brazil want to have any hope of winning this tournament, Militao has to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's really intriguing, mate. I mean, look, Vini Jr. is my favourite player in the world at the moment, and I think he might be the best player in the world. How can this not work? Like, how do you not get a tune out of him? Like, you have to make it work. He's become an important, probably the most important member, actually, of that forward line. Maybe, look, if you look at those England and Spain games, it was opportunities where Brazil could counter-attack, and they're lethal at that. It's just whether they can do that enough, because you look at their group, and obviously I've got Colombia in their group, but then you've got Paraguay and Costa Rica too. They're games where you're going to be getting a lot of the ball, and they're going to possibly just be sat behind the ball. Don't know that that will suit Vinny. He likes to play on the break, doesn't he? He likes those spaces to open up so he can cut inside.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, let's come on to Colombia, because unbeaten in 21, they provide Brazil's obvious biggest threat going into this group. They failed to qualify for the 2022 World Cup under Reinaldo Rueda, who basically was thrown out in June 2022. And they gave the managerial job to Nestor Lorenzo, who has turned them into an absolute force. And I'm really here for it. He hasn't lost a game since he took charge of Colombia. All very, very exciting. It didn't start all that convincingly. They sort of squeaked past Saudi Arabia 1-0. But since then, they have gone from strength to strength. And they've had some massive wins. They beat Brazil, Spain, Germany, and Mexico. And a really good start to their World Cup qualification cycle as well. If they can get that going, and to be honest, the way that they played for long spells against the US, it looks like they're in a really rich vein of form. I think they could be back in the title conversation. They haven't won the Copa America since 2001. There's still some interesting players in this squad. And I think that kind of where you look at it, James Rodriguez still being a key kind of player at 32 years old is an interesting one. He plays for Sao Paulo now. He's still kind of the main creative force in his team. And he's there alongside Jose Fernando Quintero as well, who has been around for a while as well. But there is a kind of young pretender to the throne in young Watford player Yasser Asprilla, who looks really, really good in that attacking midfield role as well. So different options in there to kind of mix things up. There's a lot of kind of pressure, I suppose, on Luis Diaz, who has dealt with incredible amounts of pressure both on and off the field this season and come through it with flying colours. And those two goals against Brazil were amongst the best fairy tale endings to a particular chapter or story that you can imagine, considering all things that had gone on with his father before that. They've got Luis Sinisterra on the other wing. We saw Rafael Santos Borde score a wonderful bicycle kick. John Duran, who has had a good season for Aston Villa and looks like he might be trying to push a move because he wants to actually get out and play and start every week, and he thinks he's good enough. And you know what? On the form we've seen, it's hard to disagree with that in terms of what he's done from a bit part role. And then at the back, whether Ospina or Vargas starts in goal, they have experience in spades. Back line has talent to burn too. Davinson Sanchez, Jerry Mina, Santiago Arias, Daniel Munoz from Crystal Palace, who's had a really good start to life in the Premier League. Johan Mojica of Osasuna, John Lukumi of Bologna, and Gerson Mosquera, who is on the books at Wolves, but has spent the last couple of campaigns. He was on loan at Columbus as they won MLS, and he was very, very important to that side under Wilfred Nancy. Then he went to Villarreal, and he's been really, really good there as they kind of rose up the table and ended up challenging for European spot as well this season. I think he comes back in and starts Wolves next season. I think he's that good. So The amount of talent in that back line is incredible. In front of them, you have Jefferson Lerma and Matias Uribe, who remain the shield, and a very good shield it is too. And then there's Richard Rios and Jorge Carrasal, who are pushing to start in there as well. They feel really nicely balanced. They've got a great kind of blend of defensive solidity and the ability and players to make things happen in the final third. They have these brilliant one-on-one dribblers like Sinisterra and Luis Diaz. They have creators in the form of Quintero and James Rodriguez, and they have goal scorers up top as well in Duran and Rafael Santos Borre. So overall, I think you're looking at this side and thinking, well, if Colombia start fast, if Colombia get going off the bat and Brazil take a little while to get going, you wouldn't be surprised if they win the group.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be that big a surprise, no. And I think that a lot of it will, yeah, come down to the belief that they're building in. We get into the tournament. Look, the manner of their win over the US, I don't know if that was as convincing a win as it sounds, but the fact is they did it, and they know how to use moments of domination in games to then kill them off. And that's what I think could be a big asset of theirs. Those moments when you get 15, 20 minute spells of pure domination, and Colombia will get those spells. If they utilize those moments, they'll kill off all three of these teams. Absolutely.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. I mean, the other two teams in the group are Paraguay and Costa Rica. Paraguay have won two Copa Americas. You might be kind of surprised to find out, but it has been a little bit of time since they really did anything at this tournament.
1979 was the last one, I think.
But they have got out of the group in the last few tournaments. And it's been interesting to see them develop. They got to the final in 2011. They lost 3-0 to Uruguay. They made it to the semi-final since then. And their last two appearances have both been quarter-final exits. So it's not been dreadful by any stretch, but they are in awful form. They lost three of their last five World Cup qualifiers. I don't feel like they're going to be back in there. They're currently in the Confederation qualification playoff spot, which is not the end of the world, but it's also not great. They have a couple of really talented players. Obviously, Miguel Almiron hasn't had a great campaign for Newcastle, but has very much been the main man when it comes to his country. Julio Enciso of Brighton, another one that has a real ability about him and can make things happen. But it does feel like over the course of these qualifiers and from what we've seen of them, their ability to create chances, fashion opportunities and actually score goals have all been at a pretty much a minimum. So it's been very difficult to see where the goals are coming from. And in this group with Brazil and Colombia, it's very hard to see them getting through the group stages. They haven't been knocked out in the group since 2016, but it does feel like this could be one of those years. And Costa Rica back in the Copa for the first time since 2016. They've had some pretty tough times at the tournament of late as well. They have had some steps in the right direction. They appointed former Ecuador manager Gustavo Alfaro last year. They got a 0-0 draw against Uruguay in a friendly in March, which was, you know, a positive result. And to keep that Uruguay team at bay was a pretty important one. But it does just feel like they have too many shortcomings in this squad to really challenge the likes of a Colombia or a Brazil for the two knockout stage spots here. And it just does feel like Keylor Navas at the back, Joel Campbell at right wing, and they are the two best known players in this Costa Rica side. There's just not loads more to kind of rely on. And I think that when you're kind of expecting, and when you're in a group like this, if they were in a group like Group B, where things are quite open and I'm not quite sure how things are going to play out, you might say that, you know, considering how they turned things around at the World Cup and actually, you know, considering the battering they took in the first game to be able to actually go on and compete was impressive in itself. But there's not loads to fall back on in terms of where Costa Rica are. One to keep an eye on, though, is Josimar Acosta, who plays in Belgium for Westerlo, I think. He's an interesting footballer and can make things happen. He's just starting to work his way into this side, 19 years old, and he does feel like one of the ones for the future. But he's starting to kind of carve out a starting berth for himself in his Costa Rica side. And he offers something a little bit different. There's a couple of very talented players in this front line, but it does just feel like the bits in between are going to let them down. And I think they'll finish above Paraguay, but I don't think that they will qualify for the knockouts.
Yeah. If Keylor Navas was still there, if he was there to literally hold them together, maybe, but he's retired and he's potentially your best player. He's potentially the best leader, definitely the best goalkeeper you had. Not ideal, but not massive surprise, but it's a bit of a blow, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So there we have it. I think probably Colombia and Brazil out of that group. I'm going to say Colombia win the group, but that is bold.
Okay. So who wins the tournament?
Well, we'll come back to this after the group stages. We will be discussing it over the course of it. I'm going to say Uruguay.
You're going to say Uruguay. Your shout now is Uruguay. Okay.
My shout is Uruguay.
Okay, I think it's a good tip. I'm going to go Argentina. I don't trust Brazil. If I was to go for a second favourite, I would be going Uruguay too. And I think you're onto a good thing there. But I'm going to give Argentina the benefit of the doubt here because they are the best team at the tournament.
Bielsa ball conquering the continent. You love to see it. They were all Uruguay, aren't we? As we go into this one. Very, very exciting. All right. Well, with that, I think it's probably time for us to call this to an end. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Nice one, mate. Thank you.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been the Copa America preview on Ranks FC. We hope you've enjoyed a little walkthrough through some of the big guns and the lesser known names at this tournament. We're looking forward to it all kicking off. It's about 6 days after the Euros kick off that we're into both tournaments simultaneously. All very, very exciting. The summer of international football is definitely here, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening as ever, and we'll see you very shortly. Take it easy, gang. Peace. Final seconds of the game. A chance to score and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle.
Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.